You're listening to A Closer Look. I'm Jessica Cochran. Today, we're talking about adoption, specifically cross-cultural adoption. What happens when you adopt a child from another culture? How do you keep your child connected to the culture of their birth? As an adoptive parent, do you have an obligation to try? What about for the birth family or community? And are the answers to these questions different if the child's birth family is Alaska Native? If they come from a group that is struggling to keep their cultural traditions alive, struggling to maintain happy and healthy communities? We start off with an essay from a new parent. Sarah Gonzalez and her husband recently adopted a baby, and like most new parents, at the beginning of his life, they are filled with ideals about how they will raise him.
About 5 months ago, our son joined our family at just 1 day old. We spent the second night of his life with him at the Alaska Native Medical Center, where downstairs that night, in the lobby, a traditional drumming and singing gathering reverberated throughout the hallways. It was definitely a night to celebrate. Because his dark hair stuck out all over, and because he was already lifting his head, we immediately called him our little warrior, and later we'd give him a Yupik middle name, meaning the same. He is part Athabascan, part Aleutic. When my husband and I began the process to adopt a child in Alaska, we learned from the adoption agency that a high percentage of placements in recent years were Alaska Native infants. So we should be prepared to raise a child with a cultural background different than our own, they said. As part of the required pre-adoption education, we had to brainstorm and research ways we'd help to keep our child in touch with his heritage. We wrote down things like museums, classes, gatherings, conventions, foods, fishing, books. A big one we'd learn is striving to maintain a relationship with the birth family, something that is becoming more and more the norm in modern, open adoptions. So, now that we are parents, how will we keep him connected to his culture as he grows? Well, we think it starts with us learning about his birth culture, spending more time with our Alaska Native friends, asking questions, listening. When he is older, maybe he'll want to learn to dance and drum, maybe compete in the Native Youth Olympics, go to culture camps, perhaps he'll spend time with his Alaska Native friends and mentors. These are the intentions for the future anyway, but it's hard to say what will really happen. Our neighbors adopted a half-Athabascan, half-African baby girl 9 years ago who prefers ballet to the one-foot high kick. They've taught us that growing up in a modern, diverse world means, realistically, exposing your child to all kinds of cultures. Dale and Karen's daughter attends a Spanish language immersion program, takes Western dance classes, Russian music lessons, and has traveled to Asia and South America with her parents.
So we're connected to all different kinds of cultures, none of which are really her heritage or our heritage, but it's a multi-ethnic society, and so we just like to enjoy whatever's there.
Karen says their daughter's birth family didn't express a specific desire that their little girl stay connected to her Alaska Native culture, but they make an effort anyway for their daughter's own sense of identity.
Birth mother and her grandmother are very much urban natives. While they do have moose meat in their apartment, and they do beading, and I think that would be a good thing to get her connected with. I think, one of the strongest connections we have to the Native culture is going to the Native hospital. We go there regularly for everything, and I think that keeps in touch with urban Native.
Our son's birth family lives in urban Anchorage, but they've been returning to the same fish camp for over 100 years. They spend the summers in their village, catching and processing fish, picking berries in the early fall. His biological great-grandparents invited us to dinner recently, and when we arrived, they immediately welcomed us into their family, showing us photos dating back to the 1920s, explaining their roots, providing us with the medical history. His birth mother was there too, and in her baby pictures, we could see our son's dark newborn hair and chubby cheeks. Before we left, they gave us smoked fish and invited us to fly out to their fish camp in the summers. We do intend to visit fish camp in a few years, when our son is a little older and can help bring in fish or fetch wood for the smokehouse. We want him to know that this subsistence is part of his history, just like what he learns in our Latino-Irish-German home will also be part of him. For us, and I suspect for many other parents of adopted children, raising them right is all about giving our sons and daughters the best future, which, when possible, includes introducing them to their past. In this great future, you can't forget your past. So dry your tears.
Sarah and her husband want to keep their son connected to his birth culture. His birth family is in Anchorage, where they live, so they can see each other regularly. But they are doing this voluntarily. It isn't required. Some tribes are trying to change that. For Alaska Native communities, there is a long history of children being adopted away from their communities, taken away by child welfare agencies. Federal law now requires agencies to look first for homes within the family or tribe. But there are still plenty of cases where such a family can't be found, or where birth parents voluntarily place their kids outside of the community. March Runner works with the Loudoun Tribal Council in Galena on the Yukon River. She regularly gets calls from people who were adopted away as children and are trying to find their birth families, as many as 2 calls a week. She and other tribes are working on a cultural connection agreement that would be signed by the adoptive parents and the tribe of the biological family.
And it's incorporated into the adoption decree that the families will make some kind of attempt to keep communications going, that they will let them know when events are happening, when there's births in the family, that the child may, if possible, be able to come back to the village, and when there's events going on, when there's ceremonies going on, when, say, like subsistence hunting or fishing is going on and they've participated in, that they'd be able to some way keep the connection going. Now, right now, when a non-Native family adopts a child and adoption is closed, there's no connection, there's no obligation to keep the connection. But we're finding that when these children grow up and they know they're Alaska Native or they're Native American, they start asking, where am I from? Who are my people? Who is my family?
March Runner and others work with adoptive families on ways they might be able to keep the cultural connection. But she says it takes commitment from both sides, not just the adoptive parents, who may not know anything about the culture, but from the community, too. She's worked on the idea of having one person be the liaison from the tribe, one person who can keep the adoptive family aware of events that are happening and ways to stay connected without overwhelming them.
I'm not saying that, you know, these families should not adopt children. There are circumstances when these children have to have safe homes. We just want to find a way to work with these adoptive parents that we can keep the connection and basically remember and know, not forget where they're from.
Still, she'd like that connection to be required by law.
Right now, there is no obligation for these families. And you have a lot of families that say, yeah, with the open adoptions, yeah, we will keep the communication going. We want this child to know who they are. We want the child to know their traditions. We want them to grow up. We want them to know your beating. We want them to know your language. And the minute adoption is over, so what? And they don't follow through. And a child is lost.
Next in our program, we'll hear from one of those lost children and from an Alaska Native whose sister was lost. Both have now been found, and both of our guests have found ways to tell the story of adoption through performances. Holly Stanton grew up in Bethel, unaware until 3rd or 4th grade that she had a biological sister who had been adopted and was growing up in Wisconsin. Stanton wrote a play about an Alaska Native girl, pregnant and struggling to decide where to place her child. The play was workshopped at Out North Theater in Anchorage last year. Stanton is currently revising it and hoping for a full-scale production. Jack Dalton is a playwright and storyteller, and his own life story has become the subject of one of his performances. That's where we started our conversation.
The performance is called My Heart Runs in Two Directions at Once, and it came about because I was adopted back in the early 70s. My mother gave me up for adoption. She's from the Bethel region, Hooper Bay, and I was adopted to a non-Native family here in Anchorage. They just moved up from the lower 48 and decided to adopt. And I was fortunate to be chosen, and my sister is from Southeast Alaska, also adopted. And, you know, growing up, it never seemed like an issue. I was told that I was adopted when I was five years old, and that just, you know, there it was. It just became part of my identity. But it wasn't until later on when I would tell people about being adopted. And because I was so nonchalant about it, a lot of people were like, oh, wow, you're talking about this. And I didn't understand why not. And then I started to realize how much people, at least at the time, and still to a certain extent, don't talk about adoption. It's still kind of this thing that's sort of hidden and people don't always talk about. So when I became a storyteller, I finally decided that I did want to tell my own story about growing up between these two worlds, the Yupik world and the Western world. And for me, adoption was a very central part of that. And so it was natural. It was going to become a part of the performance.
So growing up, you said growing up between these two worlds, the Yupik world and the Western world. Were you growing up, were you still connected to your Yupik part of you?
Yeah, my parents, when they told me that I was adopted, said that this is the early 70s, so you're half Eskimo and you were born in Bethel. So I grew up thinking, oh, I'm from Bethel, and which, you know, it's, if you're not from Bethel, that's a big joke that no one actually wants to be from Bethel.
Hey!
And then they got all the storybooks they could find and things like that so that I could, quote unquote, know about my culture. But again, being the early 70s, there wasn't a whole lot around. And when I think back to the storybooks that we had, they were from all these other different Inuit cultures, but not really from the Yupik culture. So as much as my parents tried to expose me to my own culture, at the time, they were exposing me to Eskimo culture, so, you know, it wasn't really... Stories from Pangnirtung aren't our traditional legends, but they really did their best. And it wasn't until the fourth grade that I learned that that part of Alaska was called... the culture was called Yupik, because in fourth grade, back in those days, that's when you had the Alaska Native Studies and learned about all the different cultures. And I remember seeing that big culture map on the wall of my fourth grade class and just going up and finding Bethel and seeing, you know, central Yupik. And I'm like, oh, I'm Yupik. And then I learned that it was pronounced Yupik. And really, fourth grade is when I actually started learning about my own culture. I've never felt not a part of it, even though I was never really close to it or a part of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, Holly, how about you? And if you could please pronounce the name of your play for me, that would be great.
Okay. So I was involved with the Alaska Native Playwrights Project, and during that period I wrote a play called Chigiutikliku, and what it translates to kind of roughly is giving something away. And it's about adoption. It's about kind of like Jack's story. It's about a young Native girl who decides to adopt her baby to a non-Native couple. But throughout the play, she kind of vacillates and seems to kind of go back and forth at periods and has that struggle as to whether or not she wants to give it to family or to the non-Native couple.
Okay. And so where did the idea for that play come from for you? Was it, Jack asked if it was based on a real story, or maybe it's based on many real stories?
I think it's kind of a compilation of many real stories for me, just because I worked out in Bethel in the labor and delivery unit for many years, and I see a lot of people who do give away their babies for adoption, but out there in our area, it's not something that's to be ashamed of. It's just an open, loving type of an adoption. And so working with people who weren't from our culture, I noticed a lot of the opinions were, you know, the more Western, like it's something to be ashamed of, or to be hidden away in a closet somewhere. And so I think I kind of wrote that wanting people more to understand what our culture is like and that it's not something to be ashamed of.
Is there concern about kids being adopted outside of the culture versus within the culture? You're saying it wasn't something to be ashamed of, and there's cultural adoptions. And you said this in your play, the girl struggles whether to give her baby to family, mm-hmm. Or relatives or outside of the culture. Is there a different way people think about adoptions within the culture and adoptions outside of the culture?
I think in our area, what I observed is a lot of people do give them to family members. A lot of times it's even like their mother or, their aunt or something. And so they maintain that relationship oftentimes in the same village. And the girl will even like breastfeed the baby. And I know tribally, that's like always the first option that they usually give out.
There's the Indian Child Welfare Act, which was passed in the late 70s, I think, that states that they have to try and adopt the child to a native family prior to opening it up to a non-native adoption. My sister and I were adopted before that actually took effect. And so when that comes up as a point of debate every once in a while about whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. And it's so fascinating because my sister and I just so happened to fall on both ends of the spectrum in which here I was taken away. I didn't learn much about my culture, even though it wasn't like my culture was denied, but there wasn't a lot of information at the time. So even though I didn't know much about my culture, here it is 40 years later, and I'm, considered a very important part of my culture. Whereas my sister, she's really close to her family in Southeast Alaska, but her culture isn't really that important to her. And it's not a judgment of her or to say, oh, good for Jack, but it's just a way of saying that's just how she looks at her life. What she does in her life being a part of a culture isn't really super important, even though she's very close to her family in Southeast Alaska. So who's to say if she grew up in Southeast Alaska, would she know her culture more and would it be important to her life? If I grew up in the village or in with a native family, would I know more about my culture? I don't think that's something to me. That's that whole idea of legislating morality. We can't legislate culture. We can't say, you're gonna stay within your culture and therefore you're going to learn about your culture. How many people do we know that grow up in their culture and they get out as absolutely as soon as possible? I know a lot of Native people who've been adopted and they still have no desire to know anything about their culture. Other people I've met who are adopted, they being adopted made them want to know their culture even more strongly. So you can't say which is going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you said you can't legislate culture, because I just was speaking with someone from Loudoun, who's a tribal administrator there, and she's part of an effort to have a cultural connection agreement become a part of adoption decrees. So this is an effort to just sort of, to put something in the adoption decree that says that, you'll maintain this connection with their culture. So what do you guys think about that idea?
I think that sounds like a wonderful idea. I mean, I don't know what adoptive families would feel about that, but as far as like maintaining that little link to where they came from and the opportunity to learn about their culture, I think that would be great for the child. What do you think?
And then I'll go ahead and play devil's advocate and say, how are they going to monitor a family? By the way, you're from this region. I think the culture is called this and that. And, is that enough cultural exposure to say that they've done their obligation to mm-hmm. the decree? People are people. They're gonna do what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she was sort of describing it as like that way, if the tribe sort of felt like, wait, this kid's dropped off the face of the earth, we haven't heard from this family in 5 years, they would at least have a way to say like, hey, you're supposed to do this, it's in the adoption decree, like, where are you? Come on, here we are, you know.
Well, in the end, I think it's, I'm a person who believes in travel and believes in meeting people from around the world and exchange students and things like that. So I don't know, it'd be kind of cool to maybe look at it as sort of a really extended exchange program. I mean, because one of the things that is often said about me is that I'm this bridge between two worlds. I'm a communicator between the Western world and the Yupik world or the Alaska Native world. And that couldn't have happened without me going on this extended exchange program and growing up, you know, within the other, and then being able to, you know, for whatever reason, having the drive to go back and become a part of my culture again.
So Holly, in your play, what are some of the questions the girl struggles with as she's making her decision?
Her decision? Yeah. I think one of the main things that her perspective is that she grew up in the village. She feels like she didn't have opportunities. She doesn't really appreciate her culture for what it is. She just feels kind of trapped. And my idea in the play is that she wants her baby to have opportunities that she thinks she's not getting.
And do you think that's a common feeling? I mean, someone asked this in a different interview that I was just listening to yesterday, but they said, do you think that young people sometimes feel that this need to keep their culture and to, you know, make sure it's surviving and to speak Yupik or whatever language, do you think that sometimes feels like a burden to young people who are like, hey, I'm just a kid, I just want to be a teenager, and, you know, not have that pressure? Which just made me think of that also. Like, if there's a young person who's not feeling that connected to their own culture, or maybe it feels like a burden that they don't necessarily feel an obligation for their child to be connected to that culture either, mm-hmm. or feel that desire to have their child be connected.
I think just to speak to my experience of growing up in Bethel and you know, being in both cultures, is that I think you don't start to really appreciate your culture and its worth and everything until you get older. I grew up and it seemed like all of my friends and myself, we just saw the negative parts of being Native. And that was one of the interesting things that I found when I came here and I spoke to people who had grown up in Anchorage in a big area and were Native. And they were so much more interested in their culture and seemed to appreciate it so much more than we did. It seemed like we were trying to more or less scoff, or maybe we were seeing the bad parts of our culture. But definitely the older I get, the more I appreciate everything and I want to learn more about it and I want to instill that in my children also.
And for me, I mean, I remember, and I addressed this in My Heart Runs in Two Directions at Once, that, you know, as a teenager, I wanted nothing to do with my native culture. I didn't like the kids at school knowing that I was native. I tried to pass as something else, Latino, or just a brown guy. Like, I didn't necessarily want people to have any idea of what culture I came from. And if they had an idea, that was just up to them to decide what culture that was. I didn't claim any culture for myself. And it wasn't until I was an exchange student, I went to Sweden for a year. And, you know, there in Sweden, they were so fascinated that I was a real Eskimo. And the people wanted to know about that and know. And suddenly I was like, oh, I don't know as much about my culture as I want to right now, because I couldn't explain to people in Sweden what it was like being a real Eskimo. But that's what sort of started me realizing, oh, this is, having this cultural connection is actually a good thing. Being a minority is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But then coming back, and going to UAA became that realization that, you know, then when I wanted to know more about my culture, oh, you don't know what village you're from? Oh, you don't speak your own language? Oh, and there was just sort of, from the native people, students, there was this, well, you're not native enough. And you don't know enough to be able to call yourself native. So, I mean, so that was a struggle for me, you know, this going back and forth between not wanting to know about my culture and then wanting to know about my culture and feeling sort of the tension on both sides of that equation.
So, Jack, you mentioned that when you were growing up in the 70s, you know, your parents tried, but there just wasn't a lot of ways for them to help you stay connected to your culture. Do you think that's different now for people who've been adopted more recently? Are there more opportunities for them to keep their connections?
Oh, there are way more opportunities now. I mean, now, especially if you're Yupik, you can go to an elementary school that's specifically for Native kids where you can learn Yupik. I mean, that's just, and I know several adoptive families who send their kids, you know, the non-Native families that send their Native kids to the Native school in Anchorage. You have the Alaska Native Heritage Center. You have all of these things now. And I think for a while it was kind of legislated embracing of culture, but now I think it's a definite true renaissance. So now there's so much information out there. And the great thing is that it's all quote unquote correct information. It's not coming from anthropologists anymore. It's coming from the people themselves. And so any person who wants to know about their native culture has access to it. And the interesting thing is they've, like through the Alaska Native high school program at the Heritage Center, I know several stories of kids who were adopted, didn't think they wanted anything to do with their native culture, went to the high school program at the Heritage Center, started dancing, started doing some of the art, started doing Native Youth Olympics, and now are like these huge proponents for culture and representing culture. And I think that's the thing that I think is so great, is that culture is one of those things that if you're forced to do it, then you're kind of feeling, oh, I don't want to do it. But if you get a chance to and you dip your toe in, that it's such an amazing thing. There's so much in terms of identity and feeling a part of something that, you know, it's pretty rare that someone's going to learn a little bit about culture and then shy away from it. Usually once they get to know it a little bit, then they can't wait to learn more.
You want to add anything to that?
Oh, no, I was agreeing because I feel like my generation was coming off of, like, my parents, when they went to school, being Native was definitely something that was not good, and, you know, the whole boarding school experience. And then my generation was, you know, it wasn't cool. And then now I see my children, it's suddenly become, like, in vogue. And now people want to know, and it's something to, you know, put you apart from others and makes you special. And so that's really heartening to see that happening for young people.
I spoke with Jack Dalton and Holly Stanton in Anchorage, where they are both currently living. You can learn more about performer, storyteller, and playwright Jack Dalton at ravenfeathers.com. Holly Stanton works for the Labor and Delivery Department at Alaska Native Medical Center. Her play is about a young woman trying to decide where to place her child for adoption. The extended version of this interview will be available online at alaskapublic.org. This program has been made possible with support from the Alaska Humanities Forum. I'm Jessica Cochran.